What's up, guys? This is Mike Cashew, and this is the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I interviewed Dusty Hyland, one of the most successful CrossFit coaches of all time. Dusty has coached Lindsey Valenzuela to a second-place finish, Kenny Leverich, Noah Olsen, Chelsea Grigsby, lots of heavy hitters, and lots of top 10 games finishes. We talk about how to balance being a coach and an athlete. Dusty placed top 10 this year as a master's athlete, and then the very next day, when he was done with his competition, the very next day started coaching his athletes in theirs. So how does he balance doing both of those at the same time, as well as throughout the year? We talk about programming and how to think about training in the off season when you want to gain strength without losing too much conditioning, how to even think about that. We talk about his experiences with his athletes at the games, high and low. And then we also talk about some specific things that he thinks coaches are missing in programming in general, as well as kind of diving into some of his personal life and what it is that makes him tick. I think it's a lot. There are a lot of great little nuggets in here, and I hope you enjoy the show. What's up, Dusty? Appreciate you doing this with me, man. I'm excited.
Hey, man. Just pumped to be on your show. Really excited. I just went, you know, did a little research and kind of was looking to see how many podcasts you'd done and who was on it already. And I'm super pumped to see all my buddies.
Hell yeah.
That had already popped on and got this thing going with you. So happy to be here.
Well, thank you, man. I see you as one of, if not the best coach in the entire game, because the people that have come to you have developed into the best athletes in the game. You know, they didn't come to you already the best. You were there with them, helping them develop into the best, which I think, you know, is unique. I think a lot of coaches get athletes coming to them that are already the best in the world, and you're out there helping them develop. So I'm excited to hear your answers to some of my questions today.
Great. I'm excited about it. I mean, I think that's a pretty bold statement, and I, you know, obviously I'm flattered. I feel like just off the top, you know, I've grown with this community and this fitness game, if that's what you want to call it, over the last 5 or 6 years, and along with yourself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, started coaching athletes before there was really coaching CrossFit athletes on the games level, and sort of kind of with the development and the process and the journey of not only our community kind of growing and sort of reaching for answers in the coaching community and development of athletes, I've grown as an athlete. So I've been lucky enough to ride that wave a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, even in early years, you know, before there were training camps and before there were, you know, online programs and specialists coming into the CrossFit arena, you know, we were doing training camps when there weren't training camps, you know, where we were calling each other up and meeting in Cedar City and, you know, mixing things up and getting dirty. And that's what I love about CrossFit. You know, and, you know, as it's gotten to be more scientific and, in some ways periodized, and, you know, the training and the off season training has sort of kind of come together. You know, we collectively as a community have gotten smarter. We've learned from each other. We've kind of kept our egos at bay for the most part, and continue to keep pushing the line of, you know, just the limit of physical, you know, human capacity in so many different arenas, you know, with respect to CrossFit. It's super cool. I honestly, I want to thank you for coming into this space and doing what you're doing, because I think that it's vital to have coaches that are passionate, coaches that have had experience, and then, you know, you know, people that are coming with new perspectives, just, I mean, I learn more from other coaches than I do nowadays than anything. Mm-hmm. You know, this conversation is something that is continuing and it's evolving.
Right.
And, you know, with you and Bruce and Nick Sorrell and, you know, all the rest of the guys out there, Yami and Bergeron, and, you know, it's really kind of, we're helping shape a generation of athletes and more so really kind of professionalize the sport, which is super cool.
I love that. I want to jump into something before we talk about more technical details, but you placed top 10 at the games this year as an individual in the Masters category. How do you think that affect? So the day after your competition ended, you knew that the games began for your athletes. How did that affect your performance as an athlete? And do you think that competition affected you as a coach at all after? And if so, how?
Okay. I think that's an interesting question. I've always tried to take on challenges. You know, life's about taking chances and doing some things differently. My primary goal, my job is coach first. And, you know, when I qualified for the games, it was very much so a hobby. You know, my personal athletics is a hobby, and it's not anything that pays the bills. So when I qualified for the games, I sort of actually didn't even really commit to it till after regionals were over, and I really had a good conversation with my athletes. And when I decided to do it, it was for two reasons, really. One, I wanted the experience because I'm selfish and I'm still an athlete. And sure, then two, sure, I wanted the flip side of that experience, so that I could be a better coach, so that I could understand literally what mentally the athletes go through. Now, granted, the Masters is not the CrossFit Games. It's not even close in terms of volume, intensity, and competition. But what I think I took away from that experience was some invaluable knowledge of physically and mentally understanding and staying closer to what my athletes are feeling going into day three of a high-intensity competition like that. Mm-hmm. I got to a place where I felt – and I had my girlfriend there as my coach and supporter, but that even as an athlete, even as a high-functioning coach, you need direction. Mm-hmm. You need someone there to drive the bus for you, because you just get mentally and physically exhausted. And, you know, recovery is such a huge key, and getting the right treatment, making sure your body's treated and that you're getting the appropriate amount of rest, and all of those things are so – there's so many factors that come into how you're going to feel on day three. Mm-hmm. Or in this case, for the athletes trying to be the fittest humans in the world. I guess it's day five, really.
Right.
That having a sounding board, having a solid coach that is there, that has helped plan and make decisions, is so vital to your success that I actually looked outside of and sought some advice from some of my former athletes and then some other coaches that were just friends of mine. Little key elements that can make or break or change your mental strategy in a workout is invaluable. I didn't realize. I mean, you realize many things. You know many things as a coach, but then when you face them physically, it changes your relationship and in terms of how you go about communicating similar or sorry, how you traverse obstacles or how you would communicate traversing obstacles to a client or an athlete later. So for example, I felt like the games, I mean, shit, I knew I was good for one or two workouts and I felt pretty good after day one. Day two really kicked my butt. I mentally went into some workouts, I don't think prepared mentally the right way. And then by day three, I was sitting in a position where I was still having fun and I was having a blast, but I wanted to get back in touch with meeting the mental and physical challenge head on going into the final day and giving my absolute best performance in each moment. And a longtime friend from Australia, I actually talked to Tommy a little bit before I competed on day three, and he helped me a lot. But something specific stuck with me, and it wasn't about X's and O's, and it wasn't about intervals, and it wasn't about my heart rate, but it was more about my approach to the barbell that changed what I did. There's a workout called the sandwich on day three of the Masters competition, and I went in and before the workout, I had a game plan, and I talked to actually Tommy about it, and he was like, "Look," I walked him through it, and he was like, "That's a good plan for you. You know, you got strong shoulders. You're going to be able to rip through the shoulder to overhead, and you know, you got a big deadlift. You're just going to have to be smart about how you break it up, and you're just going to have to go." I mean, CrossFit is about meeting the mental and physical challenge head on and being able to pace yourself and take as little rest as possible and finish quickly these workouts. But at the end of the day, it's mano a mano out there in the 100-degree weather. Mm-hmm. And Ben Schwartz, who is Danae Brown's coach, and he's from Australia, and he's been in the game for a long time. He walked over to me before the workout and he said, "How are you feeling?" I said, "I feel good. I feel like I got a good game plan. I'm just second guessing myself." And I think that athletes go through this a lot. Mm-hmm. And he said, "What are you second guessing yourself?" You know, he's a very short, direct, fiery Australian guy who I respect a lot. And he just looked at me and was like, "What are you second guessing yourself, mate?" He goes, "That barbell is light. Sometimes you mentally get disassociated with what you're doing because you get caught up in the other elements. And what needs to happen is you just need to remember to focus on the next rep and tell yourself the barbell's light." Mm-hmm. And I mean, it came down to simply that for me, was that I just needed him to tell me that my game plan was sound, that I was strong, and that I needed to remember that.
Right.
So I went out there. It was just a matter of me saying over and over again, "Barbell's light, barbell's light, five more reps, barbell's light, five more reps, finish the rep, finish the rep." And I didn't, you know, you're moving that fast and at that level, I was really impressed with the rest of the Masters because they're all really good. You guys do a great job of preparing them. But you know, if you're doing your best in the moment, you can't walk away with anything but be happy about how you did.
Right.
And I ended up like sixth. I think actually a couple of the athletes and maybe one of them that you guys coach caught me. And I really wanted to make it to the final workout, which I was super pumped about. But I was really pumped about pushing through the pain and just enduring and really executing in that workout. And I really want to, you know, thank Ben just for his 10 seconds of words, because it made the difference for me, out there. And, you know, obviously the support of my family was there and stuff. But that whole experience is insane. The experience of going and being an athlete at the CrossFit Games and knowing what you're going into as an athlete, walking down the tunnel, and you've experienced this on a team, and you may feel a little bit different about it. But when you're out there as an individual, it's like it's all you, you know? Live or die, you're walking through the tunnel and the heat before you is up on the big screen and they are suffering. Mm-hmm. It is very gladiatorial, and it's just like, okay, here we go. You know, I've been coaching a long time, but I think that experience as an athlete was something that I wanted to have, and I know that it's going to help me now not only prepare my athletes for competition, but just allow me to even help them make better choices.
Anything specific that you can think of that you'll take away from that weekend and pass on to your athletes? Any way that'll change the way you communicate with them and stuff like that?
I think that it made me feel more resolute and reticent in the things that I've been telling them in the past. I think that belief is a strong piece to success. Mm-hmm. When you put together a game plan, especially there at the games, it comes down to your ability to not only execute your game plan but make adjustments on the fly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are so many different factors that kind of come into play. I think that not overthinking, your attack and strategy to a given workout, and then being ready and able to keep your eyes and ears open and be ready to adjust while you're out there is a big piece. But staying confident and focused, life comes down to a couple things, right? In my mind. And that is, you know, staying focused in the moment, controlling the 3 feet in front of your face, because that's really all that you can do. And making the best choice possible in each given moment.
I love that, man.
Now, how do you prepare for that? You know, I mean, that's the big piece. Like, often I have athletes come to me and say, hey, you know, you've worked with these athletes and they've been successful. And, you know, how do you replicate success? It's a tricky, tricky formula, as you know, as well. Mm-hmm. You can have the best Olympic lifting coach. You can be running a great off-season training program, but competing and preparing for the moment of truth is very difficult. I see a lot of young athletes that go, man, I really admire this person's mental strength, or, you know, this person's performance. And what they don't realize is well, lifting the barbell is courageous. The moments right before that is when you question yourself the most. Mm-hmm. And coming to terms with that and understanding a process, a mental process that will get you to success is something that you need to train in the gym a little bit. And, you know, you need to get with the right people as well, so that, you know, you can create success in the gym. Finding a correct training partner, finding a coach that you respond to well and understand not only their training program but their cueing, and can be mentally on the same page with. And then, you know, all that being said, right, Mike, you can do everything right and it still go wrong. And that's sport, right? I think that I've been lucky enough to have some early success. I've also put myself in a position and been lucky enough to work with people like you guys in, you know, and the U team, and you know, with Lindsay and Kenny, but you know, we prepare, we do it again and again. You know, the hardest part with CrossFit, I think, as a sport, and you can agree with me or disagree, is the biggest variable is that in and of itself. The beast changes every year. The training adjusts year after year. It's lost a little bit, like we're chasing our tail sometimes, because mm-hmm. we never know what it's going to be. It's not like we're preparing for baseball or basketball or football even. The tasks are constantly varied and changing. So, you know, developing a strategy, a platform, and a framework for mental preparation is something that, you know, we've been trying to develop over a period of time. And, you know, you can attest to the SEAL Fit program and, you know, what you've taken from that, not only into your business life, but in your athletic career. You know, so a lot of the cues from that are things that we lean upon as we prepare our athletes for not only the regionals, but the games.
So I'm glad you're talking about this. That was actually one of my questions later. What are some of those specific things that you guys have taken away from SEAL Fit? I mean, we saw Lindsay and Val do SEAL Fit, and then 8 months later, they go 2-3 at the games. You know, that's, I don't think that's any coincidence. Their mental toughness just went through the roof. What kind of cues do you take from there? As well as what are some other things that, you know, however subtle they may be, what are some other little things that you try to do via communication with people like Lindsay?
You know, SEAL Fit was an idea that we talked about. You know, it's that the biggest thing that you get from SEAL Fit is not only an incredibly mentally and physically challenging weekend, but a way to frame up and deal with adversity. I think, you know, they make you face things that you don't, you know, some of your biggest fears. They put you in uncomfortable situations, and you learn to endure not only physically but mentally, and teach you how to remain calm in the toughest of environments. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can stay calm, that means your head is clear, and that means you can make a better decision, and you can move quickly and swiftly. So, you know, developing that strategy is something that you can take from SEAL Fit, but then you can take into training. So, what we'll do is, I started to plug in 2 years ago what I would just write in into program. It would be, you know, as we got closer to the games, or more specifically the games, because we pretty much know the workouts and the obstacles that we're facing when coming to regionals or the open. But we would do some adversity training, and that can be anything and everything from, in 30 seconds, you know, unleashing a workout on an athlete, creating an obstacle that they need to overcome, whether it's visually or, increasing their overall body weight and asking them to perform a challenge, to anything and everything. I mean, anything and everything. We start to begin to attack not only physical challenges, but mental challenges. Holding your breath underwater, treading water, different things that will force you to make a stay calm and push through a physical task. So, without getting super specific, those are some of the things that we do to get these guys ready to go. It's interesting. The mental toughness that Lindsay already had going into the CrossFit competition and season, and then the backside of it after going through the SEAL Fit experience was interesting. It definitely changed her perspective and made her a better competitor, made her a better person. And the same thing goes for Val. She was already such a tough and incredible athlete. Did you go through SEAL Fit with Kenny when he did it?
No, I was with Val and Lindsay.
Right. Okay. And then redid it, right?
Exactly.
That following summer.
Exactly.
Is that right? Right. So I had Kenny go through that process, and he's a guy that has such a very different relationship to fitness. Mm-hmm. He's probably one of the most physically gifted athletes I've ever been around. I say that a lot. He's one of those athletes that just physically astounds me still to this day. He's enthusiastic. He's passionate. He loves to perform, and he's a guy that really enjoys doing good stuff. But what Kenny really lacked when I started working with him was a level of focus and consistency, in not only in his training but in his performances. Mm-hmm. And his experience going to SEALFIT, I think, really kind of helped create a sort of structure and purpose to his days. And helped him grow up a little bit, and it's really kind of not taken the. I think when he first got back from SEALFIT, I think that there was this military mentality that it sort of instilled in him that was like, okay, we're going to work, and this is work, and we got to do this, this, and this, and this. And while that structure and purpose to training is important, and it's successful to remain focused, I think in the same breath that being Kenny is important, being having fun, being enthusiastic, and truly enjoying, you know, snatching 300 pounds and joshing around with your friends is just as important to the success of Kenny Leverich is as dialing in his training. And so finding that balance for him is something that it's still a process. And I don't think we've seen the best of his athletic career, to be honest with you, yet. He's got more in the tank, and I think he's hungrier than ever this year. So
that's great to hear. And it's, every athlete is wildly different, and he definitely seems to be one of those. And I don't think he's put together a full weekend of what he's capable of at the games, at least yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's super funny. I think that I had this conversation with Noah as well, and that was, man, I just want to be on the podium, man. I just want to get there, and man, I just said, it just hasn't happened yet. You know, you prepare, you get ready, you qualify, you do all the things right, and you know, sometimes you end up getting fucking taken over by a wave in the surf. That's just the way it goes. That's part of life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, understanding that and dealing with that is part of not only growing and maturing as an athlete, but as a human being. And, you know, not every day is a sunny day, but we're going to prepare for the rain and we're going to get ready, and then we're going to go out and, when the sun is shining and it's right and the stars align, things are going to come together. You know, I think, you know, a couple athletes that I admire a ton out in our community, obviously Rich is a guy that just clearly has a lot of mental strength and,
yeah. All right, guys, we're back. We had a little technical difficulties. we are back. Let's change gears a little bit here, Dusty.
Okay, sweat.
I don't know if you have run – I don't know if this would be considered a problem or what, but I've had to turn down a number of athletes, including games athletes, that want to work with us. And the reason that we turn them down is because they deserve someone with enough time and energy to give them amazing coaching. And there's only so much time in the day. So I'm very, very selective of who I'm going to spend that time with. Do you run into that problem ever? And if so, how do you decide who you're going to work with and who you won't?
I do. I've pretty much, for the most part, for the last 4 or 5 years, kept a group of athletes that I work with relatively small. When I originally started coaching fitness athletes for, you know, the games, what have you, I tried to keep it more local. That was sort of a big piece, just because I like to get hands on with athletes as much as I can. And then, you know, as this thing's grown, it's, you know, you kind of have to put a few things in place to help weed out and decide, because you only have a certain amount of time in a day to commit to coaching, and you want to be as effective as possible. And you know, if you have clearly defined goals as a coach, then, you know, you need to make decisions based upon that. Over the last couple of years, gotten more selective. For the longest time, I was really only coaching one or two athletes, and now it's, you know, there's sort of different levels of coaching that I'm doing now. But at the highest level, where I'm coaching you one-on-one, and we're spending a lot of time together, there's literally five athletes at most. Mm-hmm. That are getting that type of access and information from me, and it's not because I wouldn't coach more athletes. It's a combination of what you just stated, really. You know, a lot of these athletes deserve the time and energy and focus on their training that is required for them to be successful, and we only have so much time to give. And then the other part is, you want to pick and select athletes that you like, that you thoroughly enjoy to train, that you get along with. And, you know, personalities don't always mesh. And so making the right choices for your for success ultimately is the key, not only to be successful on the podium, but successfully day to day going into the gym and enjoying the process and working with athletes. And I've been pretty lucky to that point, fostering and working and developing relationships with clients like Noah, Kenny. You know, it's really this, more so than any year, this year there's been a new breed of athlete that is sort of is coming along, sort of what I'd like to say is the next generation of CrossFit athletes that are smarter, that are well prepared, that are well versed, that understand how to become a five-headed monster and are relentless and hardworking and demand time and energy. And ultimately, for me, there's only so much time and energy that I have to put to this thing. So I really try and pick people that I can have a profound change and effect on. I really like finding athletes that I not only enjoy training, I like their story, I like their personalities, I like their work ethic. But ultimately, if there's a problem that I can help fix, that's exciting to me. New things, right? Like, so, I have a young lady who sought me out for some coaching a few months back, and it's sort of blossomed into more. She's moved out here and has, been training here, but she's coming off, an Achilles rupture. So she's 9 months out of that. And I've never, knock on wood, never really had to, go through the process of a, you know, traumatic injury, subsequent surgery, before. So that's, a new challenge for me as a coach. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think that's sometimes what I'm just looking for. I'm looking for, new adventures, things that, obstacles that we can overcome mentally and physically, and help athletes have success, especially athletes that I've seen struggle in certain areas, not just gymnastics, but, you know, you can attest to this. There's such a huge mental component to what we do, that getting over the hump at regionals or the games is sort of the next piece, right? And that's the fun stuff. is really getting into the nuts and bolts and the psychology of what's going on with a specific athlete. Taking the machine apart and tinkering and finding the nuances that we can better adjust and approach and help them find success. One thing that I want to try and do, and this is one of my goals, is not readily present the answer for the athlete. I think that there's sort of, you know, you take them through, and this is getting a little, hopefully this analogy works, but like it's sort of like you start working, you know, you're teaching math and science, and you get them to a place where they can do algebra on their own, and it's not that it's that complicated, but you want them to ultimately be able to make the right choices for themselves. Mm-hmm. When you're not there.
Right.
And anybody can script out a way to approach a workout, mm-hmm. but developing that mindset, that decision-making process is ultimately what we're trying to do, and we're all trying to build champions, right?
Right.
So, you know, if you look at Froning, he never, and I don't know him that well, I've met him a few times, but a peripheral perspective on that guy is like he surrounds himself with good coaches, but he's always made the clutch decision and calls on his own.
Right.
And so how do you develop that? How do you develop a framework of coaching that allows that progress and process to happen for an athlete? Mm-hmm. It may not be in year one, it may not be in year two, but by year three or four at the highest level, they need to know, they need to have the processes in set in place, the structure and purpose of their training, their mental approach should allow them and give them the framework to make the right decision in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Even so, in competition is one thing, but also in training with all these athletes traveling so much. You know, you can't be with all of them all the time, and you know, you can text back and forth and call and make last minute changes to the program mm-hmm. when they don't have equipment. But there are times, and I think those times are growing as these athletes are traveling more and more, that they have make a game time decision on how to change up their programming for the day. Or they, you know, Noah might go out to Miami and right. end up training with someone else, and that person is on a different program, but they want to train sure. together. So I think it's very key for them to also learn how to make those adaptations to their program as well, because over the time,
for sure.
I think those add up to become a huge part of the whole equation.
All right. I mean, you want to develop these athletes into – a place where they can not only make decisions on their own, but there it becomes more of a conversation, right? You're there to help guide. You're not there to tell them what to do in every given moment. And I think ultimately that will lead them down the road to success. I think quite often I've seen coaches that are super, and this is, again, this is not a judgment on any specific coach. This is just more of an observation. But coaches that are highly structured, almost overly structured in terms of their instruction and their programming, and don't allow enough for an athlete that has developed enough freedom to make choices and decisions. And I think that that can be a problem. While most of us are looking for structure in the greater CrossFit community, at the highest level, we're trying to help guide and make choices for our athletes. Presenting them with different options and helping them make decisions are, again, what are going to help lead them to. Remember, the last day of the CrossFit Games, they are sequestered more often than not, and they're put in a position where they have to make the best choice possible in a given moment. And succeed or fail, that moment is a huge one. It may be the biggest one, especially if they're in contention for a podium spot.
Mm-hmm. I want to change gears again, go into programming just a little bit.
Sure.
I know this is a hard topic to discuss just over like an interview. You know, I think a lot of programming is you need to be looking at you know, you have to be looking at a program to really talk about it. But what is your stance? I'm gonna just talk about one of the biggest things, one of the biggest questions, problems in the community. What's your stance on athletes in the off season where their primary need is to get stronger? The biggest problem that I've had is I know how to get people stronger. I feel like I'm really good at it, and I can get them stronger, but people are afraid of losing their conditioning. So then that the idea of concurrent training becomes very important, because I want these athletes to remain engaged and bought into the process, and I can't have them going 6 months feeling like shit about themselves because they're so scared about losing their conditioning. So I'm sure you've come across that, you know, that issue. How do you deal with it? You know, maybe on a technical, from a technical standpoint, and then how do you talk to those athletes about it?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, if you're talking about, what are we talking about specifically? Are you talking about an athlete that maybe is trying to make regionals? Or are you talking about
open and regionals? Yeah.
Sure. If indeed their goal is to become a CrossFit competitive athlete and compete at the regional level and subsequently make it to the games, and they are deficient in the strength category, you know, you have that come to Jesus conversation with them and say, hey, look, we're going to focus in the next, you know, 3 to 4 months on primarily, you know, our driving goal is getting your squat, your press, your deadlift up, and, you know, increasing your ability to move the barbell efficiently. And then subsequently what we'll do is we'll give you some, you know, monostructural cardiovascular endurance and some light, you know, CrossFit pieces. And you won't even say it to them that way, but what you're basically giving them is a beefed up strength package, a, you know, moderately complementary conditioning package that keeps them from going insane. And we just celebrate and push those numbers, you know, week to week. We keep embracing that, you know, that the back squat's going up, and that we focus on good functional movement, and that the bar path on their snatch and their clean and jerk continues to improve, and not worry so much about the number that is on the scale.
Right.
It's a tough one, and it's a battle, but I think that it's a really good one if you want to get competitive. You look at the numbers at the highest level, and you look at, I mean, we all go back to Rich, but you got to go there. The guy's the strongest dude, has the strongest pair of shoulders out there, and is a very efficient machine, but there's nothing that replaces strength, right? So you can be as technically proficient as humanly possible. Take a guy like the gymnast kid from Seattle.
Anderson. Fantastic. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Fantastic mover, right? But until he gets strong enough to handle not only the adversity, but just the ability to catch a clean, under fatigue on the third day of the CrossFit Games, it's never going to be there. Mm-hmm. And that's just a prime example of two athletes that are both phenomenal. But just the difference between how we measure our human capacity in CrossFit and where most people need to spend their time. And that's, we want to be harder to kill in general. The stronger you can be, the better and more durable your body will be under adversity, under stress, whatever it is. So there you go.
That's a good answer.
The easiest way... There's not an easy way to have that conversation, because people identify with conditioning. It is a de-stressor, right? And part of that is why we go to the gym, is like, man, we got stress at work. We got you know, stress at home. Maybe our personal life isn't all in order. We've got, you know, three kids and we've got mouths to feed and we've got a lot of other things we need to de-stress. So it's hard to just lift, but, you know, we need to find ways to work in unison, and good programmers will figure out how to keep the conditioning at a place where it won't adaptation affect the adaptation we're after with the lifting.
Right. And it's not, that part isn't rocket science. I think the hardest part really is that conversation, and right. It has to be had with every single athlete. So, you know, through Brute, as we train hundreds of athletes, you know, it does become a problem sometimes. So,
yeah, for sure.
You know, it's nice to hear that you have that problem as well, and that that we just got to keep doing what we're doing.
I think the hardest part, and I think you guys are doing a great job of it, because this is a growing thing. Is we're now coaching remotely, we're now offering programming, right? And we're communicating, but it's not a two-way street enough. You know, the hardest part with the growth of CrossFit now for us is, we're communicators, right? This is a conversation that we're having with athletes that come into our gym that are needing to connect, mm-hmm. right? And there's all these different avenues, and it's not a two-way conversation. You can't always see, feel, and hear an athlete what they're dealing with on a given day, to not only make adjustments to their programming, but just be there. So those are issues that we're just having, I think, as a community, that as we continue to grow and as technology gets better, it will become easier. There's right. all these apps now. There's, you know, there's WhatsApp where you can actually get direct feedback on your lifting and you can communicate all over the world, which is super cool. There's different ways around it, but I think that's primarily the issue for a lot of us out in the world is just communication.
Yep. It's huge. It's huge.
I sound like Dr. Phil right now.
Yeah, you do.
Communication, bro. Communication. Right.
Tell me about the year that Lindsay placed second. What was that experience like? The final day was, there were a lot of changes, and I'm sure there were a ton of different emotions going on. Tell me about that experience on that last day and then seeing her up on the podium.
Sure. You know, that day was a curious one and a crazy one. I feel like every CrossFit Games has been different. And, you know, looking back on it now, she was sitting in, I think, sixth place going into the final day, and we had three events. We knew that, you know, Sam had sort of run away with it at that point, but we didn't know what the workouts were going to be or come, but we hadn't seen a lot of gymnastics or heavy barbells, and so we knew the sprint chipper was up, and we knew that was going to be a good workout for her. We tested it. She went out there and performed really well. She got a top 10 finish, and that put her in the position before the big announcement, which was Cinco 1 and 2. And I went and sat in that briefing with Castro and the athletes, and it was like we'd prepared and written the workout. It was a good feeling to know that some heavy deadlifts were on their way, that we'd worked on our handstand walks, that we'd put in the time on the rings and developed her capacity in the parallel handstand push-ups and the muscle-ups. And it was like a light switch went on for her. And even though the body was pretty fatigued, you know, neurologically pretty fried, it had been a long week of competition, we put our strategy together, we felt pretty confident about what she could do physically out there on the floor. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. Like, you think, you know, you draw things up on paper, you're like, you're writing warm ups and you got mobility to do and you've got all these things, and then all of a sudden time flies by and the warm up's almost gone, and her hands were a little jacked up. She really wanted to warm up her muscle ups, and we were kind of arguing in the back, and you know, there was just a sheer amount of effort and determination from all the athletes back there. It was like Margot was over in the corner and her coaches were surrounding her, telling her she'd got it, and it was go time. And you know, Lindsay was pretty calm and sitting on the bike, and we were just talking with her, and Arsenio and I were just standing there and kind of going over the basics of, you know, what she was going to go out and how she was going to attack things. You know, we touched a little bit of weight, and then it was just go time. It was ready to, you know, you're going to put the car out on the track and let her go do her thing. A lot of emotion, but it was almost surreal. You know, you get to that place where all of the training kind of comes together, and determination, mental strength, and your physical ability to do work takes over.
Right.
And that's what happened out there. You go out and you perform. I honestly felt very very confident in her ability to compete. I didn't know what the other athletes were going to do or how they were going to respond to the workout. But I knew we had a good shot. I mean, it's a crazy thing, putting all that work in for a number of years and seeing it pay off. But I didn't even know how it was going to shake out. I really thought we were fighting for third place. And the way the points swung, it was insane. It was great. We were standing there in the arena when the numbers switched, and it popped up there, and it was insane. I couldn't believe how it all shook out at the end. Just super elated for her and her hard work, to be honest with you. And it was exciting to see Val up there, and obviously really cool to see all three of the athletes that we gotten to work with that summer be so successful.
Yeah, it was a good year for that Cedar City group. The Cedar City training camp group.
Cedar City training camp was pretty awesome, you know. One guy that was out there with us and wasn't there for a ton of time was Zach.
Yeah.
And Zach's a great dude. Are you still working with him?
Yes. We don't keep in touch nearly as much these days, but I think he's going to go team this year. That is the last thing that we discussed.
Right. He's a heck of a guy.
Phenomenal guy.
I got lucky enough to just spend a little bit of time with him and was around him when he went through his regionals experience, where he kind of got some redemption and mm-hmm. failed to qualify the year before. And you know, we didn't spend a ton of time together, but I got to get there and you know, train with him a few days out here in LA and program a little bit for him, and then work with his home coach and be there for his run where he actually qualified, and the first year that Spieler didn't get to go. Right. And that was by and large, as a coach, a very, I don't know, I was so stoked for him. It was such a funny regional to be at because everyone was so there, and it was such a Spieler region, and I admire the guy so much. I mean, he's such a stud. But you know, Zach had asked for my help, and I was there, and you know, it came down to him really just being very mentally tough and going out and executing a workout to get him into the CrossFit Games. And it was such a cool moment for a guy that I know was dealing with a lot of mental adversity based upon the year before, and feeling at times that he wasn't quite ready and or good enough and or prepared enough to do it. Which in fact I knew as a coach that, and you know as a coach, that that guy is capable of so much and so much more.
His ability to endure pain is ridiculous.
And that's really what it came down to in the last workout. Was him getting himself into that mindset, turning into the Incredible Hulk, or he likes to call Spider-Man, and really go out and execute a workout that just sucked really bad. It was all those lunges all the way across the arena that just ended with, what was it? Was it deadlifts at the end? Ugh, it was so bad.
Was it the one that started with the handstand push-ups? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was like handstand push-ups and then rope climbs and then it was like fat bar or something or other. Yeah, that's what it was. It was handstand push-ups. It went double unders, handstand push-ups.
Toes to bar, push press, lunge.
Shouldered overhead, lunge across. Yep. Was that what it was?
Yep.
Yeah.
That was brutal. That was a long lunge.
That was a long lunge at the end. Love that guy. Anyway, just things like that. Like, you know, you get to see remarkable athletes, and hopefully be a part of them affecting change and getting over the hump. And that was a big one too. It was very cool. Coincidentally, not to switch gears on you, but just going back to this last games, you know, and getting people set up for a run at the podium. I felt like Lindsay in 2013 and in this past year, she ended up in a very, very similar position going into the final day. And, you know, the workouts, while tough, were different, you know. It just didn't shake out the same way. And, you know, you can hope, pray, and train your ass off. And it still not go your way. I'm super proud of the way things ended up for her and Noah. I felt like there, you know, a couple things here and there, you know, came down to a couple moments, and both of them would have been standing on the podium as well.
How did you feel? Go ahead.
What? How did you feel about the games this year? Do you think they were tougher than they were in any other season?
I
heard that a lot.
I think physically they were the toughest that they have ever been. I think Murph really, really just set the tone for that entire weekend, and it honestly, it just wrecked people to where a lot of people just never fully recovered from that workout. I think they didn't.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of people went way too hard on that first run, and they just blew themselves up, and they paid for it the rest of the weekend. They didn't respect it quite enough. They didn't, you know, everybody was antsy to get started. Stuff like that. So I think physically it was the most challenging. Mentally, I think it was the same as every other year. You know, I think even just going out on that floor, you know, 12 different times, however many times, in front of all of those fans, against people that, against, you know, equal competitors, is a very, very challenging thing mentally. So I think in those terms, it was the same as always. But it was brutal this year, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. How'd you feel about the last day and the physical challenge of the pegboard and all that stuff?
I personally wasn't a big fan of that coming on the last day. I think it was I think it's a cool idea, and I think if athletes had a little bit more time to prepare for it, maybe in the gym, I think that would that would be good on, say, Friday or Saturday, and it would have been good to announce that, say, a week or two before, and give them, you know, maybe you know, what you call it, the bikes got sent out, maybe pegboards get sent out as well, and everybody has time to practice. I think it would have been better for CrossFit, you know, in terms of their ESPN production, as well as it would have been a more accurate test there at the end. So didn't really like the placement of that workout, but you know, it's no worse than some other weird shit that we've seen over the course of the years. You know, we're walking on our hands and stuff. That's weird in itself. So
right,
you know, that's the it's the only sport where we walk on our hands. So
yeah, it's true. It's true. Those are valid points. You know, on the flip side of it, as much as we want it to be visually exciting and user friendly and all those things to promote the sport, at the heart of it all, I kind of like the test, even though it left a lot of athletes standing and staring at the board.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it in a different spot or space. I mean, the question remains, though, then what is it this year? Is it going to be a backflip? Is it going to be something else that challenges our athletes in a different way that we haven't envisioned yet or we've ignored, you know?
Right.
And I bet your bottom dollar it does show up, whatever it is. You know,
I'll tell you this, if Brooke would have gotten that very last peg, I probably would have had a much different answer for you. She was one peg away and she fell.
That sucks.
Yep. I would have had a different answer for you. It would have been a great idea.
It's amazing what success will do for you, right?
Exactly.
Right?
Let's talk a little bit more about coaching and then start to wrap it up.
Yeah.
What are three things you think that coaches are missing? And I'm talking about just general coaches, not necessarily coaches that are working with games, athletes, but just coaches in general. What are the three biggest things they're missing in the programming picture?
The three biggest pieces they're missing are, I would say, strict gymnastics. I would say low aerobic training, running, rowing, really boring,
right? Absolutely.
Low intensity stuff. And then I would say proper mobility pieces that really help preserve the nature of good functional movement.
Right.
I would say, preserving the functionality of our squat, the mobility of our shoulder, and those pieces that can just readily be addressed on a regular basis, be systematic and relentless in that pursuit. I think the hardest part about all those three things are they aren't sexy, right?
Right.
They're the things that most people don't want to do that much.
That's elegant.
And so how can we present it? It's sort of like presenting the vegetables at dinner over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
How can we make them good? How can we make them great? And how do we vary it enough so that folks don't get discouraged? Even with the gymnastics programming I'm doing online, you know, it's skill wad, but it's, you know, the underlying pieces of the gymnastics training are all, you know, strict elements. It's all, it's all developing strict strength and position, elasticity, stability and mobility in the bottom of the dip, stabilization in the handstand, it's skill wrapped in old school fundamental gymnastics and mobility.
Right.
So it's forcing athletes to do the things that they don't really want to do. I hope. We've seen a lot of success with it. And then it's also not randomized. So then now it's periodized, and it's giving you training and cycles so that you can test, retest, and see the growth that we're after
right.
in our movement.
I love those things that I think you put them in order of how they are being used right now. I think lots of, you know, I think the strength game, everybody is on some kind of weightlifting program. A lot of people are starting to pick up the fact that they should be doing a structured gymnastics program of some sort. The endurance, you know, more and more people, but not nearly enough people realize how important that pure endurance work is. And then the mobility piece, you know, I think people have an attitude of if I can get below parallel, then I'm mobile enough. But if you look at the champions, they have phenomenal mobility. Right. They, you know, Rich wears nanos for Christ's sake. And I don't think that's I don't think that's a reason for other people to wear nanos when during their weightlifting. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, look at how mobile the guy is. Every movement he does is easier.
Absolutely.
And so I think that is incredibly, incredibly important, but it's not sexy. It's really boring. And sometimes it takes months to see any kind of, you know, long-term, gain in that area.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and you got to stick to a program and fully believe in what you're doing and immerse yourself in it. And that goes for just the athletes that are out there that are going to a gym, right? Like, if you're not into the gym and you don't believe what your coaches are telling you, you're at the wrong fucking gym. Go, you know, find a gym where, or it just maybe you have issues with commitment, because there are a lot of great gyms out there and a lot of great coaches. So make sure that if you're going to buy into a program or a training program or a coaching staff in a gym, to fully commit to that stuff, because it's paramount to success.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think this might not be I've started saying this recently, and it's probably not so good for business, but in my opinion, it is true. You know, take all that money that you're paying for programming / you know, going to the gym closest to your house, take some of that money, spend a little bit extra money on gas to go to a gym that provides you with the right training partners and environment, because I think in the end that plays a much, much larger role. You can have a 100%. perfect program, but if you're not being pushed to that next level, then you're really not going to get that much better. You need people that are better at you at certain things, better than you at certain things. You know, that's why CrossFit is so effective in the first place. You go into the gym, you want to have the top time on the board or whatever. You want to have a competitive time, and so you go all out. Then we start doing these competitive programs, and you're training alone or in a small group. And if that group is not fired up to be there, then it might not be the best group for you, and you might need to spend a little more time and energy finding a better team to train with in the area.
For sure. For sure. You can't replicate the intensity and the success that you can have with the right training partner and the right coach in the gym.
Right. And that's what you, in my opinion, that's what you've done so successfully. You have a brick and mortar gym that these high level athletes train together at. And it's no wonder that they show up in big competitions and do well. You know, they're training with the best of the best.
That's what we try and do, for sure. I'm actually staring at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 athletes all training right now while we're doing this podcast.
Love it.
And a brand new guy who just lives upstairs who's coming in to nice. Work out.
Nice.
True story.
I got two more quick questions for you. One.
Okay.
So you own the Skill Wad, which is crushing it. You're part owner in Dogtown. You're training, I'm guessing, hours per day. You're coaching several hours per day. What? So, I mean, you have a lot of stress in your life, and I'm not calling it negative stress, but that's just a lot of stress. What do you do to decompress?
I CrossFit.
Nice, nice.
I travel. I do. I spend a lot of time with my fiance and my dog. We pretty much live this CrossFit lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I would say I've tried to travel and vacation a little bit more, just to de-stress. I honestly spend the weekends. I watch other sports. I chill out. I love going to movies. I don't have a lot of other hobbies, to be honest with you. It's pretty much in the gym all the time, which is a little nuts. I'm a little bit of a fanatic football fan, so that takes me a long way. That's about it at the moment.
Love it, man. Get a little vacation in you. Come back, dude, fired up.
Dude, I'll tell you what. We spent 2 weeks. I did coach a little bit. We spent 2 weeks in South Africa. It was fantastic. If you can get down to Cape Town and not only the CrossFit, but just like literally went sightseeing, went hiking, went up to Table Mountain, went over to where Nelson Mandela was imprisoned. We spent 3 days on a safari, which was incredible.
Wow.
I love to travel. It's you know, experiencing life outside of the gym is really, really fantastic, but I love going to new places. And that recent trip to Africa was fantastic. It was really cool.
That's awesome, man. That's good to hear.
If I'd suggest anything in your lifetime, go when you're young and go on a safari.
Hell yeah.
Ridiculous.
Last thing. Actually, two more things. What do you look back on in your life and are you most proud of?
You know, look back on my life and most proud of, opening the gym.
That's a heavy one.
Opening the gym and getting engaged in September.
Awesome.
Yeah. And not in that particular order, getting engaged and opening the gym. Sometimes I say things backwards.
Yeah.
You know, obviously achieving some things as a coach and as an athlete, but those are a little farther down the line.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, for sure.
What book have you most often gifted to others, or what is your favorite book? Either one of those.
Ooh, I love this question. My favorite book that I read most recently was by Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan's strength and conditioning coach. And the name is, it's so good. Of course my internet's not going to work. Tim Kobe. Of course I can't remember what it is right now.
That's okay.
Hold on 1 second. I'm going to look it up right now. Strength and conditioning coach. It's a great book. His name is – where is it? This is killing me. Tim Grover's book.
Tim Grover's.
That's his name. Check it out.
Tim Grover's. Okay, guys, I'm going to look that book up and I'll put it in the show notes on the website. And will that be your most gifted book, or is there another one that you gift more often?
Again, it depends upon who I'm gifting to.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to read a book that is about training the best, working with top athletes, Tim's a guy that has been doing the work. They call him the Fixer. He was Michael Jordan's original strength and conditioning coach in Chicago. But after Michael retired, he basically kind of bops around and comes in and helps people rehab injuries quickly, works on their mental game, and helps them on the professional level get their shit together. Mm-hmm. And I just found it really an interesting read, especially really talking about the psychology of coaching and injury and recovery. It's just a really interesting book to read. Wow. I really love Phil Jackson's books, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of basketball and the Zen Master. I love his stuff. His latest book, I drop these down in Kindle and then I read them at night when I can't sleep.
Cool.
So his latest book I really enjoyed. I don't remember again which book.
The name of that book.
There's 11 book, books.
The name of that book you were thinking of was Relentless.
Yeah.
That is a guide relentless. To from good to great to unstoppable. I just ordered it on Amazon. It's going to be here in 3 days.
You should. You're going to eat it up. You'll read it in like a day.
Awesome.
I promise you that. That was something that I had Lindsay read a couple years ago, that I had Noah read, and we try and do some of that. We try and do some inspirational movies as we lead into the season as well, and some
yeah.
stuff.
I love that.
That help visualize where they want to be, where they want to get to, and who they want to be, and the type of athlete they want to exude when they're out on the floor. So.
That's awesome, man.
All right, man.
Where can people find you on the social media?
People can find me. Whoa. People can find me. Sorry, guys. People can find me on www.skillwad.com. You can find me at Dogtown CrossFit. Instagram, follow me, Dusty Highland. Instagram, the Skillwad. Facebook, what have you. Twitter, dusty.highland. It's that simple and easy. You can always just call Dogtown CrossFit if you're looking for some information on me and coaching and CrossFit and gymnastics.
Awesome. And then give me a little, maybe just a minute, explain what the Skillwad is and what it does for athletes.
Sure. The Skillwad was originally designed to be an accessory gymnastics program, providing structure, an elemental 4 to 6 week structure to help develop our basic pull, press, and movements for gymnastics and stabilization in inversion. It's built upon the foundation of basic gymnastic elements, elemental gymnastics, and really, ultimately, the original piece was designed to develop muscle ups, chest to bar pull ups, and handstand push ups.
Awesome! And how many?
And
how
it's
many
just and it's just you, grown from there.
How many athletes?
It's just
do you
grown
have
from there.
Doing that now.
Just over 1,600.
That is amazing. So, guys, hang up after this podcast. Go join the crew of 1,600 strong.
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
amazing.
Guys,
it's awesome to hear, man.
The one thing that it's providing now, and we originally launched just what I called was the iPhone 6. We put it out there, and people were like,
you,
"Wow, this is
you made the iPhone.
This is way, way above my ability, and I need something else." And I knew that we were going to need to put out the Elements program. So, if you're looking to develop a muscle up, get strong enough to do a handstand push up, and get your pull ups going. And just get better at gymnastics in general. There's an Elements package in there. Then we launched the advanced aerobic capacity training for gymnastics with the high volume, high skill stuff. And recently we've added Creative Creature, which is now a different look at bodyweight movement and gymnastics. Brought to us by a professional breakdancer, CrossFit extraordinaire, who has taught me a lot about functional movement, body weight movement, and brings a different perspective to this stuff, and is going to teach you how to balance on one hand, how to develop wrist strength, teaching you elements of broken angles and circular movement, and different things that we may see in the future in our arena, in our industry.
I love that, man. That was awesome. All right.
Thanks, brother.
I appreciate it, man. It's been good.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Mike.
Later.
Thanks for having me on. Talk to you soon. Bye.